Hello, horror fans. Welcome to Selling, the show about horror movies brought to you by one horror nerd and one horror noob. I am Jed Donaldson, the aforementioned noob. With me today, as always, my co-host and our nerd, Josh Giallo Yoakum. How's it going, Josh?
Grazie. It's going good, man. Just sitting here under a sheet of ice, like Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining, like just shivering.
I imagine the same expression on your face.
Yeah, doing well. I know. I think we were just talking a little bit before the show that like where you live and where I live are just right now blanketed under ice, so just in time for the holidays.
Feels like a message.
yeah, just getting ready for the holidays.
Indeed, we're just 2 days away from that most festive of holidays.
Yes, and we'll be dropping this on the even better day, Boxing Day. That's when you buy gifts for your servants, right? Isn't that like the Boxing Day thing? Like that's like Butler's Christmas, isn't that like?
I thought it was fist fighting, but. That's how we always did it in my family.
That's why, you know, you'd get like the ever ready gloves from your dad. You're like, oh god damn it. Oh. You know what tomorrow is.
No. Glue and glass, my friend.
Nice. Speaking of which, Jed, this is episode 69 for us, my man. Nice. We did it. We got there.
It was the goal. I mean, I guess we're done.
Shut it down.
We'll never be able to do it again.
What have you been up to, man?
I mean, I wish I could say it's been lots of stuff, but it never is, and it is not now. So,
any plans for the holiday?
We always go up to visit my wife's family in Cleveland. So we'll be going there on Christmas Day and spend a couple days up there and visit, and it's always fun. But then we'll be back here. Boring ass Cincinnati.
You've all. Don't you have like a good football team again? Aren't they going places? I thought I saw.
I mean that's true, but I will tell you that I have been a fan of that team, the Bengals, since I was like 8 years old. I was at that point in time it was the first time sports really came onto my radar, and they were just going to the Super Bowl for. Basically, I think they'd been there once before. This was the second time they had gone. Was in like '89.
And this was before Icky Woods would sell meat door to door, right?
Correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know that for a fact. Maybe he's always done it.
Just maybe in a disguise, he wore a mustache on his mustache.
A side hustle. But you know, my dad was really into it, and so that like any child, I kind of got into it because he was into it, and then kind of stuck around through all the heartbreak and sorrow that followed in the years afterwards. And I mean, we eventually did end up with some good teams again, but there came a point where I did not like the way following that team made me feel. Like I got so invested and so caught up in it. Like when they won, I felt great. But when they lost, like it really hurt. Like it really brought me down. I was like, there's no reason for me to feel this way about a sports team that I have nothing to do with. It should not affect my mood this much. So,
I found like a real healthy way to approach sports, and one that like dedicated sports fans really love is just always to cheer for the team that's winning because you like victory. That's you know,
I personally don't feel like there's anything wrong with that. Not that I would ever do it, because Jesus Christ, what kind of monster do you think I am?
I think I've asked this before, and like, boy, we did it again. But do we talk about sports on this show?
No, I don't think so. I think what we talk about actually is horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, specifically ones that you have chosen. You put a nice little list together in a attempt to turn me into a fan of the genre. We took a little detour from that formula last week or last time when we did a movie that I chose.
Yeah.
And who knows whether Josh would have picked it at some point or not, but we did Barbarian last time. And, this time we're sort of back on track where, We had a movie that we were going to do, and then, Josh, explain what happened, because I'm not exactly sure. All I know is I'm going to do it.
So I gave our guest, as is tradition, a choice, and we ended up with the movie Bay of Blood, which, when we recorded the episode, was available on multiple streaming formats. And then the clock struck midnight, and the Bay of Blood turned back into a pumpkin and disappeared from streaming forever. I don't know.
That feels like a message, too.
So we ended up with this, and this also ended up being like our Christmas episode sort of by default. So I've picked more Christmas themed horror movies in the past, but we ended up settling with your choice of Demons. That was also Jen's runner up. So
not a whole lot Christmassy about this movie.
I would argue that the usher in this movie is dressed like Buddy the Elf.
I think that's fair. I also would say that there's a lot of red blood and green
pimple juice.
Yeah, so maybe it's a little festive in that regard.
Yeah, we ended up settling on the 1985's absolute push the envelope for the time of just gore and chaos on screen, Demons, from Lamberto Bava, son of Mario Bava, who directed one of your favorites from early in our run, Black Sunday.
All right. It's just sometimes older films don't age as well as you want them to. I can understand why at the time.
Taking a 40-minute break in the middle of the movie to do the Charleston.
I understand at the time this was the height of horror, but the things have progressed, and I think maybe for the best in some regards.
Well, yeah, I'll be curious to see what you think of his son's work, because the other movie we were gonna do, the Mario Bava movie, Bay of Blood, I'd argue is really different than Black Sunday. I'd be curious to hear eventually what you think of kind of where 10 years took Mario Bava in his filmmaking.
Sure.
But Lamberto Bava, he's credited with doing a few movies before this, including Mystery Science Theater favorite Devilfish. But he kind of shadow directed his dad's last movie. He wasn't really able to do it as well as he wanted to, and brought in like his son's listed as like a second unit director on Shock, Beyond the Door 3, also in some markets, which is a pretty good little movie. It's a tightly effective little is a woman being gaslighted, or is there actually something supernatural going on type thriller that works really well. But he got interested in doing a horror anthology that was going to be three stories. But what would ended up becoming Demons was kind of the story that he just kept coming back to. And he was just like, well, why am I doing an anthology? Let's just do the one that I think is the coolest. And also kind of lucked out into, Italian filmmaker connection and probably family friend Dario Argento also wanting to produce films, so put some money behind this. And Demons is a smash hit. This thing is in Italy and a lot of European markets, outgrosses Nightmare on Elm Street and pretty much all the other big horror films of like 84 and 85 that came out over there. It's like
that runaway. Is shocking to me. All right, look, not to say one way or the other about how I feel about this movie. I can see this being I can understand you saying this was like a cult hit, right? Yeah. But I can't understand you saying this was a mainstream success, like at all. It does not strike me as that type of movie whatsoever.
Yeah, it maybe just shows a little bit of the difference in what was like taking off in different markets. I don't think England or the U.S. a lot of money was made off of this, because ratings were a little bit different. And this is a movie that's I think even today is a hard R. I would call it hold on, you're doing what now in a movie?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
I think one of the things that really helps it is it's got a killer tagline. The tagline on the poster and in the commercials is they will make cemeteries their cathedrals and the cities your tombs. And like a lot of things in Demons, don't think about it too hard. Just say it. It's like, can you Jed? I actually want you to repeat this back to me. I just want you to feel the power of saying it. They will make cemeteries their cathedrals and the cities your tombs.
They will make cemeteries their cathedrals and cities your tomb.
It feels good, right?
Not bad. Definitely not bad.
Fucking rules. Like a lot of Italian horror movies, this and just cinema in general. This is set in Germany. Very little of it filmed in Germany. Mostly filmed in Italy.
Isn't that kind of like par for the course with Italian films?
Yeah, yeah.
Trying not to convince specifically you. German, but set it somewhere and basically have nothing actually done there.
Try to sell it there. Try to sell it in markets where there's like bigger named actors and a larger potential overseas potential. And the Italian folks at the time seemed to enjoy even more movies that weren't set in their own country, even if they were all. This is also like, how do you feel about this being maybe like the most 1985 movie you've seen? Like, I'm trying to think of other things that might be in the running. Like, maybe like, was The Break-In, was Electric Boogaloo 2 in 85? Like, what else is more 1985 than like this Motley Crue, Billy Idol, Rick Springfield soundtrack?
I don't know that I could point something out to you that would be more 80s than this. It starts off strong, slapping you in the face with like punk haircuts on a subway train. Give you that old school New York vibe.
And ends with katanas and dirt bikes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love Rick Springfield on this soundtrack. Just like all these metal, like fucking Accept is on this. The Beavis and Butthead's favorite band. And then it's like the guy who did Jesse's Girl. Speaking of the music, though, there's also Claudio Simonetti. This is the Goblin guy, not billed as Goblin here. I think this is one of those years where he couldn't be Goblin on his own.
is that an ongoing thing? I mean, I know there's some tension there, but every so often he just can't be Goblin anymore.
And I think with a lot of the personalities involved in this film, like, I don't want to stereotype like Italians as like a dramatic people. But I think like the love-hate relationship that everybody has in this film, and especially like we can talk briefly about where the Demon series went after this. people's, you know, one year they loved each other, one year they hate each other, then they love each other again relationship after this. But yeah, it's if they were more Italian, they'd have to be played by Chris Pratt. It's, it's
your go-to attack.
It's a me, Chris Pratt.
Shit, I didn't understand a word you just said.
But yeah, let's talk a little bit through this one. Maybe I'll do a sidebar at some point and talk through the Demons films, because I think that's a roller coaster that folks who might not be aware of the Demons series and how complicated it gets might want to go on.
Sure.
You mentioned up top, we get like the Goblin, or sorry, Claudio Simonetti intro riffing on like In the Hall of the Mountain King for Demons. And we're introduced to our main heroine, Cheryl, who seems terrified on this train. Just fucking spooked by the soundtrack, apparently.
it's really strange. This train ride is like, it's almost hypnotic in the way it keeps repeating like the same couple shots and the sound of the train with the music in the background. Like, and you're right, she seems like she's just never rode a train before and is baffled by the entire process, because that's the only thing I can think of why she's so shook.
Or she's holding her like her Bartok like music book very close to her chest and looking at these punk rockers. Maybe she thinks they're gonna like steal her school books from her or something. Like, make fun of her.
They didn't seem to be aggressive or making any sort of trouble. It was like, if this was an American movie and you wanted to show that, you know, they were upset or intimidated by the people that were on the train car with them, those people would be acting rowdy, like laughing, being very loud and in everybody's faces. These were just quietly having conversations to themselves or just sitting as one pair of girls were. They weren't causing trouble or anything.
But there is a mysterious stranger who comes, who follows her out of the train. We get this tense sequence during the credits where she thinks she's being stalked, and she is being stalked by the Phantom of the Terminator.
I do want to point out also that there's when she gets off the train, there's a huge crowd of people that get off the train with her, and then like almost immediately the entire
gone
station is empty.
she was lingering. She was, you know, if she'd moved with the crowd, she'd have been fine.
I feel like there's a little bit of some of that supernatural stuff going on there, too, because after the guy catches up with her and gives her the movie ticket and is walking away, then people start pouring in.
Yeah.
So it's almost like she was like transported a little bit, like just kind of slightly shifted out of reality.
So this guy in the mask, there's a man who is wearing a metal mask, and he also looks like maybe he's disfigured around it, or at least has some makeup on to make like the mask look like it's blending into like half of his face. This is also a Italian film director. This is Michele Soavi. And if we when we go off on our tangent, we'll he is one of the figures of who made this series what it is. He also plays the guy in the movie who puts the mask on. So
okay.
I don't want to say this movie has a through line or makes sense, because it doesn't. I don't want to like give anyone the impression that this is a movie that rewards you for like following a plot thread
you just got to go with it.
It's music video logic. It is, again, another very 1985 thing about it. It makes about as much sense as like Twisted Sister kicking somebody out the window and then like everyone in the family turning into the rest of Twisted Sister. And that's like the story. That's kind of what this movie is.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
But he's giving out tickets to see a movie. And she asks for one for her friend as well. Her friend Kathy. And they don't know what the movie is. It's just tonight there's going to be a movie showing at the Metropolis.
Right. There's the ticket. It's like a golden ticket, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But it just has like the name of the theater and no other information on it.
Yeah. And her friend Kathy, she meets up with. I think like one of the lesson of this movie is like, hey kids, don't skip school, because this otherwise demons happens. Otherwise, it's all fun and games.
I think you may have a point there. I'm struggling to find any other lesson you could learn from it.
That your dirt bike katana training will pay off. That's the other lesson you can learn from demons.
Keep at it. You may not think it has much application, but
they introduced, like, when they get to the movie theater pretty early, this Chekhov's motorcycle and katana.
Yeah,
it's establishing shots.
It's right up there in the lobby. You got the katana, the motorcycle, and the mask right there.
Yeah, the full mask this time, which also kind of looks like the one from Black Sunday too. I think that's another kind of connection to his dad's work. Looks like the mask hammered into her face at the beginning. But we get our main heroine and her friend head to the theater, and like we're introduced to a cross section of folks who got free movie tickets to go.
Yeah. It's strange the variety of crowd that comes here.
I think my personal favorite is the married couple. The like, it's our anniversary. Well, I'm taking you to a show. Fuck you.
Yeah, they really don't seem to like each other very much. I was quite fond of the blind guy that came.
With his daughter?
It had to have been daughter, right?
I think it is supposed to be the daughter, and I think it's supposed to be like, you know, the joke that it's a blind guy going to the movies and having like the movie like explained to him by his daughter, who also like is a multitasker and is like scheduled her like movie theater sex time during like explaining the plot to dad time.
Yeah, I don't know how she expected to get away with that.
Hold on, let me just I have like tape recorded myself explaining the plot of this movie, and I'll just hit play on that and walk away. We have the young couple that are you know, making goo goo eyes at each other, the Tommy and Hannah.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, just a local businessman and his two employees who also want to go check out film on a day off.
That's a very polite way of saying it.
a pimp and his two prostitutes. Who
couple working girls.
This is the two I know who show up in a lot of other stuff, because this may come as a surprise to you, but there's not like a ton of black folks in Italy. So folks who are actors in Italy got cast quite a bit because, you know, the director wanted to fill a type, and I put type like in some real fucking heavy quotes there.
Yeah, yeah.
You have Bobby Rhodes, who played like a lot of toughs and thugs as Tony the Pimp. Has most of my favorite lines in this movie. Especially up front, just like, that'll teach you to touch things.
It's a lesson she needed to learn, I think.
And the one who needed to learn this lesson is Goretta as Rosemary, the prostitute. I like Goretta a lot. She turns up in a bunch of, like, good friend Bruno Mattei, who made Jaws 5, shows up in a lot of his films. She has the energy of someone who vigorously maintains their own Wikipedia page. It's pretty wonderful. She has an autobiography about this time period in her life called "I Was Young and I Needed the Money."
Fair enough.
Because she went on to be like a writer and stuff. She puts on the display mask and gets like a little cut on her face. Ow. Anybody else stand out to you? We have the two guys who get paired up with our two girls.
I mean, they're as boring as the female leads, so whatever.
I mean, one of them's big and strong, and one of them's like Doogie Howser's friend.
Less so.
They have a little meet cute at the soda machine. They have a little, it looks like you're having trouble with soda. Punch!
That's it's always great to woo your prospective girlfriend with violence right at the bat.
We establish up top that it's perfectly normal in Germany to drink soda out of a Coke can with a straw, so we get the payoff later.
Thank God they did that, because otherwise
I had something written down here about like the movie opening up with like the train lights being like the demon's eyes, but that's maybe a reach for a movie of, like, demons to put those things together.
I don't think it was unintentional, because I had the thought that they looked like eyes as well.
Yeah. But it's a horror movie that's being shown about a group of youths that find the tomb of Nostradamus. So
were they looking for the tomb of Nostradamus?
Just cruising graveyards. They're just
all right.
Hey everybody, look what I found. Day of the Beast also had Nostradamus stuff in it. We have another Christmas movie connection here, right? That's
sure.
a magician. that's part of the Christmas story, is just that there's like fucking magicians, right? Like it doesn't seem to be like part of the modern church that like just these three wizards found Jesus.
I have to say that I'm not as up on my Christmas lore as maybe I should be. It's entirely possible that magicians play a prominent role.
Yeah, the three wise men. They're the magi. They're three magicians.
I mean, I was Santa more than Jesus, but I guess if you want to go there.
And I now like I just want to see like Santa like casting spells to a stage match.
I was gonna say the greatest stage performer of them all, Jesus. He's right up there with Tony Wonder.
But the characters in the movie fuck up the tagline. They say instead of they'll make cities your tombs, they'll make tombs of your cities. Like, come on, get on point. Like,
let's... I give him a break.
Did this whole like setup work for you pretty well? Like the movie theater and like the movie within a movie. Like, was that feel interesting and fun to you at all?
Yes, I think there is. I think there's something to that. I'm uncertain how connected the events of what happened in the theater are to the movie that was being shown. It feels like, other than the blatant, the person in the movie puts a mask on, just like, what's her
Rosemary name? Rosemary does, yeah.
And has the same, gets a cut on his face just like she does. I don't really know if there's any sort of like framing story that I should be looking into or what.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, again, this is a movie that doesn't really like it, it's a brisk 90 minute movie that develops the ideas and lore behind itself about as much as like a segment in an anthology would. It doesn't like it.
Yeah,
it really does not care about like the lore or the whys very much.
I was
going to
say, I think maybe even less than an anthology movie segment would, because I mean, at least in there, they do kind of set up sort of what the rules of what's going to happen are, even if you kind of have to kind of infer them yourself.
So, I mean, it seems like the rules of the movie is like the mask turns you into a demon. And then if you like injure or kill somebody else, that person turns into a demon too. It's kind of zombie rules.
Like basic zombie rules. Yeah. I was uncertain what, if any, connection the movie had to it. Like, I didn't understand if they were supposed to be like an evil film producer.
Some questions in life and in demons do not get answered, Jed. That's we have to learn to live with demon's mystery.
And then there was also like maybe like the owner of the theater or the ticket lady, who I was convinced was part of it right up until the point where she gets attacked by demons and turned into one herself. She must have just been an employee at this evil theater.
Just a spooky employee. Just a real Wednesday Addams type that they brought in.
So, yeah, I'm totally in the dark as to the like the motivations or the why this is happening.
I mean, it's happening because it's 1985 and rock and roll music is big and cocaine is very big too. And God bless that we get these movies that came out of it that are just I think something you can't say for this movie is like it takes 20 minutes or so to set up all the stuff that we've been talking about so far. Yeah. After that happens, it takes like another 5 minutes or so to set up another group of characters we meet, but they have their own wild shit going on. But other than that, it is just like pedal to the floor acceleration of the movie.
When we meet that second group of the I guess almost a four man gang of car thieves and drug addicts.
Yeah.
They seem to have literally nothing to do with what else is going on in the movie.
And I struggled
for a while to find out where they were going, like how is this going to come together, and then it comes together and doesn't pay off in the slightest. Like there's no real reason for them to be there.
There is. We'll get there.
Okay.
I think there's definitely a reason they get there, and something that happens because they get there. So it's it does have a payoff.
All right.
But this movie within a movie, they dig up Nostradamus's coffin. They pull out like a book that explains the movie within a movie has some exposition. The movie that we're watching doesn't.
Yes, the movie in the movie explains the demon stuff, but why?
And then one of the characters puts the mask on and goes through the whole transformation. But I love that his crypt that they open up, that they slowly read his name off of, it's like 2'6". It's like
it's a baby. Nostradamus died in the crib, I guess.
Another great line of Italian dubbing dialogue. How do you know that? It says it right here.
That was pretty good.
As the other character's reading the book. How do you know that?
I'm reading it right now.
So Rosemary also starts like bleeding, and she goes to go use the restroom, and we get a real fucking cool Grody effect here. This movie is gross, and I love it for it. It is real Grody.
So, it does have some gross stuff in here, and some really interesting practical effects as well.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, there's a reason I was kind of comparing this to. I don't think it has the intentional over-the-top comedy of the dead alive brain dead, but I think it has like the chaotic energy and like just willingness to do whatever with gore.
I feel very generous to give it any sort of comparison to Braindead, because I think that that movie's in a like a category all on its own. But I think I kind of understand what you're
saying. Yeah, that like this starts with this like little cut that she got on her face developing into like a pulsing boil and like exploding into green goo.
Yeah.
And by the time her friend comes to check on her, she's gone through like the full demon transformation. She's got the like long fingernails, fangs, red eyes. Mm-hmm. Later on, like we see that those are reflective eyes. And she's having this chase while everybody else is watching the movie. They're having like this parallel action take place. Yeah. I think this scene's pretty fun. I like her. She scratches her friend's face and goes chasing her down, and it's this like cat and mouse game until she ends up behind the movie theater screen.
I did like the idea of her screams of terror and pain being drowned out by the sound of the movie, which is also playing a scene where someone is getting slashed to pieces.
Yeah, and then even the when she starts actually slicing through the screen, it's when there's a knife going to the tent.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a neat set piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And she stumbles in. Everybody goes to like check on her, and they figure out that there's something going wrong, and they start like panicking. And then she starts turning into the demon, so we get to actually see the transformation this on the second go-round.
Yeah, this is where some of the really most impressive practical effects were, I thought.
Yeah, it's really good. It's her, like, you see, like the hands that they're pushing, like, this prosthetics through, like, look good.
And, like her fingernails splitting open as the black claws come pushing out, and then the fangs pushing out her old teeth from her mouth.
Yeah.
No, some really inventive and interesting things to look at.
For like our people that we've started to get introduced to are start to get picked off a bit, because at the same time this is happening and she slashes the like shitty husband who like also like can detect horrors anywhere apparently.
his whoredar is strong.
His whore sense is tingling. he gets slashed. And at the same time, Rosemary has gone upstairs to where Liz, the blind man's daughter, and her lover are making out, and like does the double strangle. That's a.
I wasn't sure about that movement at first until they got to the point where she was pulling it so tight that their teeth were cutting into each other's faces.
It's pretty dope. And then like. That dude's corpse gets like kicked down from the, because they're the only ones who are up in the balcony.
Yeah, I do want to say Liz is a piece of shit. She comes to this movie with her blind father, ostensibly do a play by play of what's happening on the screen, leaves 10 minutes in to get fingered in the hallway, and then hears the guy crying out like he's wondering where she is. He's frightened, like he can't see shit. And it's okay. He keeps saying, I need to go, and then we gotta kiss some more.
I love that Ken, the kind of like the sidekick boyfriend guy, when there's like the screams and the other sounds, like and characters are expressing like, oh, I think that there's someone behind the screen. He's just like, oh, no, that's just Dolby. Dolby's, like, really good, guys. Like,
I thought that's what he said. I thought he said it's just Dolby. I wasn't sure if he said it's Dolby or, like, don't be ridiculous or something.
some key product placement in Demons from Dolby and Coke.
Someone hearing screams and the other person dismissing it as Dolby is pretty funny.
No, that's just real. That's high quality sound, my friend. You're not
never heard it before. I understand it can be frightening.
And Tony's like cry of when Carmen gets kicked, like slashes through his, she's a friend of mine. We are business associates.
there are some line reads this movie.
Again, it's the Italian dub style, so that's like, yeah, it might get some folks. They build their own audioscape after the movie's filmed, but sometimes the voice actors.
I feel like you would probably want to give some direction to the people who are actually reading the lines for you.
What did you think of the irony of the blind man getting his eyes gouged out?
I don't know that irony was the first thing that came to my mind.
In the Alanis Morissette sense.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because Rosemary gets him as well. But at this point, everyone's rushing to the exits. They're trying to get out, and everything's been bricked over. They're trapped inside the theater. Demons, they used like the low bid contractors to get that. They build those things like Starbucks. They just plaster up a wall.
Which is weird, because like you think they'd be able to knock, those people be able to knock that stuff down real quick. If it's so shoddily created.
But no, they're trapped. They're looking for. I love like Tony the pimp. Like for the next like 20 minutes or so of this movie, just like assumes leadership role. It's great to watch. It's just like, everyone, the emergency exits will save us. Like, very confident.
And another life. I mean, you know, maybe he had that in him all along, and just twists and turns and the vagaries of life just took him down a path.
Another favorite of mine is coming up when they like break down a door and then they disappear behind that door, and he just screams out from the hallway, another door.
Gotta explain. If you're not gonna show it, you gotta say it.
Some other folks get attacked here. There's a woman gets scalped. She gets her, the top of her, like her hair ripped off.
Yeah, that does happen.
Some cool stuff. Where somebody finally realizes, hey, this is kind of like what happened in that movie we were watching, right? And then you get these moralists. You get your Tipper Gore, like movies are to blame for demons.
Yeah, that's what I always thought.
I think it's Kathy, and Kathy is like afterwards, like, you know, if she'd lived through this movie, spoiler, it would be Marilyn Manson next. It would be sure. Video games. they decide that if the movie is to blame, they're going to get to the projection room and they're going to shut the movie down. But the movie is being run by computers.
That's a pretty high tech setup for 85.
So they just start smashing it to pieces, smash everything.
I mean, if you're operating under the assumption that the movie is the problem, then I guess this is a good thing to do.
Yeah, but it's you know, this does not solve their problems. The movie stops. We no longer have a movie point.
See, I'm unconvinced that the movie inside the movie had anything to do with it at all.
Just a coincidence. Just like the person who made that movie was having it premiere there is just like, what the fuck happened at that premiere? It's like Nostradamus' great, 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 great grandkid.
I think that'd be hilarious.
That the end of the movie just cuts to like a bunch of Hollywood bigwigs sitting around reading like the trades, and it's like, Billy Nostradamus, like, it looks like something happened at the theater screening your premiere. And he, like, lowers his newspaper. He's got the full-on Nostradamus beard and, like, robe get up. Like, what? this is where it starts cross-cutting to the punks that we're introduced to. This gang of three guys and a girl. I believe it's Ripper, Pig Boy, I forget the third dude's name, and Nina. They've just stolen a car and they're cruising around town, and as we're gradually introduced to them, they're like they've got their own Coke can with a straw, but they're snorting out of theirs. They spill the cocaine in the back seat and have to scrape it up with a razor, including like scraping a bare razor across Nina's naked upper half or barely clothed upper half. That provokes some stuff, right? That's a titillating.
I mean, yeah, if you want to say that, sure. It didn't awaken anything in me, but
it doesn't help that Nina's your story. Like every time I see this movie and I see her, I'm just like, she's either 15 or 35, and I can't like I can't quite circle that square.
My wife came downstairs at one point while she was on the screen and said, she said immediately, that girl's 12.
Yeah, she appears like very young, but like has lived a hard life for 12.
Right, she's the subject of that Sublime song, The Wrong Way.
pretty much. But we eventually learn, we not yet. We don't learn why they're around yet. If you were waiting for that callback, not now is not the time.
All right.
Now Tony rules the balcony. Tony rules the up top. He's king.
So what was the plan here?
Barricade themselves in the balcony, question mark escape. Like yeah, the promenade. The guy who hung himself. First of all, they get like,
I don't think he hung himself. Got his, like, his I don't eyes. Think that was his plan. I think he was hung.
but before like they get a demon attacked, we find out that Werner's not a demon yet. He's just a guy who's got his eyes poked out by a demon and is like now warning them it's not the movie, it's the theater. Which again, like basis.
Why did he know that?
He did have like premonitions about the mask earlier. He was like, oh, don't touch that, before it gets like taken off. Tony, he's real quick with that switchblade to come out. He's just fighting off some demons hand to hand, looking to throw corpses off the side of the promenade there, and cut the rope that's dangling down the guy's hanging from. But surprise, he's attacked by a demon. Still switchblade fighting it on the way down.
Attacked by two demons.
R.I.P. to a real one, to Tony the Pimp.
He died as he lived.
I love that, like, our big, like, hero save the cat moment is that, like, Tony instructs him to help him throw a corpse over the side. He's like, I will not do that.
Now, this is one of those times where there's a line read that was, like, incredibly funny to me. Because, like, he's like, frightened of him. And then, like, all of a sudden, just screaming at him that I'm not going to throw this person.
He's got a line, man. He will not cross it. His friend, not so much. His friend's just immediately corralled. Ken is just like, where's the body? Where do you want it? What are we doing now?
Oh, down there? Sure.
I've been waiting for this day. So our storylines intersect here because the punks get chased by the police. The police are like, oh, that's a dead end alley. We don't need to worry about killing them, just shooting them. I don't know what German police are up to in the mid 80s. Just like, punks with a stolen car.
that scene escalated very quickly.
But the punks, the alley that they've gone down into, there is an entrance that's open into the theater, and they're able to get into the Metropole. And this is why I argue that they're important, because they get in, but when they get in, Werner, who has escaped in like the chaos of again, another spoiler, the let's all barricade ourselves upstairs plan doesn't go super great. It doesn't go well for the people that decided to do that.
I mean, it was going fine, and then the first time they heard any sort of commotion outside the barricade, they immediately start dismantling it.
that's how they're going to escape, Jed.
They had no indication that it was not demons pounding on the barricade, but for some reason decided it was police coming to save them.
They had hope. They had hope, Jed.
I understand what you're saying about Werner getting out and kind of causing what happens towards the end of the movie. I would argue that he could have just got out anyway, and there's no reason for those punks to be involved whatsoever.
Just some more gore, some more people to dispose of, and chaos. I think the thing that I think is just this movie does brilliantly is it's just again just that constant acceleration. Like in the afterglow, you might ask a lot of these questions, but it doesn't give you time while it's happening. It's just like, there are people running, and there is screaming, and there is gore, and there is violence. There's no plot in the way of the story, as Joe Bob Briggs would say. a lot of folks get picked off in this attack, but we do have
practically everyone except for our main four and the two people who weren't up there to begin with.
Yes, because Tommy has gone down and been reunited with Hannah, the two like young lovers. They're both covered in blood and ensure each other that neither one of them is hurt. But I kind of like their little sequence here. They decide they're going to like that it's more safe to be on their own. They just want to be with each other, and they decide they're going to try to escape through the vents. And they keep hearing like the demons scratching behind them.
The largest vents ever.
since Die Hard.
I also want to point out that something that I noticed and my wife, who was still down here at the time, noticed, couldn't not notice,
yeah.
is no one in this movie knows how to crawl.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm talking about?
What advice would you give them?
Legs. Use them.
Now, those are, you drag with your arms.
Right, yeah, just drag the dead weight.
In the 80s, you never did leg day. It was just, you did all upper body exercises, and that's how you, don't you remember the, like, handstand craze of 1985, where that's how everybody got around, was handstanding everywhere?
When my wife saw the scene, she's like, did he get hurt? And I said, no, they were just running around a couple seconds ago. It's like they got this vent, and he completely lost feeling below the waist.
But the payoff here is that, like, the sound that he heard behind them is now in front of them once he's switched positions with Hannah. So Hannah, who is not Aja Argento, but Dario Argento's other daughter, who's in a couple of movies, attacks and kills him. A little nepotism kill, a little, only my daughter's hands can strangle people in this film.
So the rules about turning into a demon are unclear here.
I think she got injured, or she got, like, the blood in her, or, like, there needed to be a demon. It's a movie. It's
yeah, okay.
Demon attack. That's, you know, it's every couple minutes. You got to throw one in there.
Says it right here in the script.
So the next folks to get got, we have our main group of four people. They've broken into, like, another section of the theater. There's a whole bit where they, like, break in and all the women just start screaming, panicking.
A lot of hysterical women in this movie.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's very 1985 in a lot of ways. But you think there might be, like, a scare with the vent again, because that's where our main group decides they're gonna go. Like, this seems popular. Look, guys, mm-hmm. bloody footprints leading this way. It's the way out. But Kathy has also gotten got. And I'm what do you think about this transformation scene here?
Not much.
What? The demon popping out of the back after she gets, like, beaten.
Oh, that one. I thought you were talking about when she actually, like, was turning herself.
Yeah, she gets, like, the red eyes and, like, attacks like everybody else, but then she gets, like, the second sub demon that we haven't seen yet. the one that bursts out of the back. This is a cool practical effect. This is a pretty great one.
Yeah, she kind of bends over and arches her back, and a demon crawls her way out.
Yeah, and slashes Ken, who, like, Jed, I hope that you're a good enough friend that if I get injured by a demon and I ask you to cut my head off with a katana, that you would do that for me.
This totally read to me like, I know I'm going to die, but I need to die in the most badass way possible. Here, kill me with this katana, please.
Yes, yeah, it's he waits till he turns, he waits till the last moment and gets him. And this is, like, George, who, like, I haven't even mentioned his name. He's tall and strong, I guess. He's,
like, yeah, sure.
he's got a square enough head. He's got a, like, matches up with Cheryl pretty well. You know, this is not a movie you really go to the for the depth of characters. You go to for just chaos. and he helps deliver that in spades here, because we're going to get to the crescendo of this movie, the end game.
I didn't mention it earlier in the upstairs scene where the demons first broke in and started killing everybody, but it seemed like the direction there was basically big bumps, make the demons look strong, brother.
Yeah, there's a lot. We're skipping over, like, a lot of the kills here, because there's just, like, there's people getting their heads crushed in movie theater seats. There's people getting, like kind of impaled down on the movie theater seats. There's, like,
a lot of movie theater seat related kills.
A lot of just, like, ripping and tearing and smushing and claw swipes and
there's, you know, a choke slam at some point.
Yeah, then it turns out what you do to stop demons is you ride around on a motorcycle with a katana and you cut them into pieces.
I never knew. there's a lot of improbable motorcycling. Like riding across the backs of the movie seats.
Ramping. It's, again, I defy you to find a more 1985 movie, because I think, like, that was the height of, like, there needs to be a fast bike and a ramp. in the culture.
what movie theater has a ramp like that?
Cool ones. that's the only theater that you're supposed to go see the new Avatar in, is one that has the 5DX ramp technology, so you can feel the Navi do like fucking cannonballs off a water slide over your head. That's why you never count out James Cameron, man. He's a visionary. It's not a gimmick. It's not a gimmick in his hands. He will take you under the water to an underwater
room. I guess not. there'll be ramps down there.
So I feel like we had a Chekhov's motorcycle and katana. Like, what's the opposite of a Chekhov something?
I was certain this was happening at some point. From the moment I saw it in the theater lobby.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the next thing that happens after many, many demons are killed by George, who also, like, just fucking dips Cheryl at one point, like, whips her around the corner off the bike.
I'm not sure that he did that on purpose.
Yeah, but, like, you know.
Yeah, he did.
maybe tell her to put her hands around your waist a little tighter, my dude. But, yeah,
my next notes just say, oh, helicopter. Sure.
Yeah, it's a surprise. There's a helicopter. There is a helicopter that is on the roof that crashes through the movie theater. I do want to mention, like, I did go see this in a movie theater, like, during this past year. This movie plays like gangbuster. Like, we were talking a little bit last time, like, the Barbarian episode about, like, the theatrical experience. Like, this plays well to a room full of people. I will give you that. And especially people who haven't seen it, the helicopter comes crashing through and it's just like, what?
Yeah, I gave some thought to it after the fact and kind of realized with what's going on outside in the world that maybe the sound they were hearing was the helicopter crashing into the roof rather than just one that was up there and fell through the roof for no reason.
That just got heavy.
Which is how I read it to begin with. Like, in the moment, I was like, fucking helicopter, all right.
I mean, how many other movies have you seen where a helicopter falls through the roof and then the hero turns to the heroine and says, here, hold my grapple hook.
the standard issue helicopter harpoon gun that he apparently knew was in there because he climbed in and immediately was looking for it.
Let's see, the black box, the first aid kit, the harpoon gun. There we go. we gotta kill some of those demons with a helicopter blade, right? Even if I'm sure the safety people showed up on set. It's like, all right, we want to get this helicopter blade moving at a good clip and decapitating people. Like, you can turn it about 2 or 3 miles an hour.
You can hand crank it once. I'm not even certain that blade was moving fast enough to knock someone down.
Shut up, it's cool. our hero and heroine use the winch and the grapple gun to escape through the hole in the roof that the helicopter caused, where we get the return of Michele Soavi.
Who apparently was the big bad the whole time?
Just waiting on the roof for the first person to climb out of the helicopter hole and have and reach the final boss. I knew it would end like this via rooftop helicopter hole. I really do enjoy just like how much fun this guy is having. He's like, you know, a silent, disfigured demon man with like the mask buried in his face. But when Cheryl climbs out and George is just hanging on to the rebar and he's just like giving him gentle pushes, like pushing his hand off and tapping his head and pushing down.
He's basically just like, I got this. I don't have to show any urgency. I can just play around a little bit.
Speaking of Michele Soavi, we probably should take a moment here, just pause, and talk a little bit about the Demons movies that come after this. So after this is a breakthrough, they go into production immediately with basically the same, like, director, writer, cast, crew, and basically do the same movie in a high-rise apartment. And when I say same people, like, many of the people who died in this one are playing different characters in Demons 2. It's kind of the same movie again, and if you liked the first movie, you're probably going to like the second one, because, like, it's the same. It's more. So where the series starts to go off the rails and get real interesting is that there are three movies that are Demons 3. The first one that starts getting made, Michele Soavi is supposed to make a movie based on another story called The Church, and it's going to be Demons 3. He decides he just likes that story and doesn't want it to be a Demons movie and thinks, like, Demons is going to sully that story. But it gets released in many markets as Demons 3, The Church. Lamberto Bava hears this and gets furious, and he's making a TV movie called The Ogre, and is like, fuck you, you're not going to make Demons 3? I'm going to make Demons 3. The Ogre is now Demons 3. at the same time, another horror filmmaker is like, boy, those Demons movies have made a lot of movies. Here's a movie called Black Demons. It's also Demons 3. You got the three Demons 3s. Then Michele Soavi, like, was like, well, shit, like, The Church didn't do as well as I thought it would when I didn't release it as a Demons movie. So I'm going to make a movie called, I was making a movie called The Sect. Now I'm going to make The Sect Demons 4. And that's going to be the official Demons 4 that I'm putting in the canon.
How did that happen? Someone has to, like, be in charge of the IP, right?
Italian sequel laws, man. As long as you're not using the same, like, exact story elements and characters, you can call your shit whatever. That's why Jaws 5 got me. Lamberto Bava is just like, well, shit, I'm doing a remake of my father's Black Sunday. It's kind of uses the mask. Demons 5, baby. So this is all within 4 years, by the way. They are cranking out Demon sequels at an absurd clip.
I guess spite is a tremendous motivator.
We're not done.
Oh, okay. It doesn't change what I just said.
Luigi Cozzi, who made Ghost House, made Demon 6, which stars the guy who plays George in this movie. It was released in America as Edgar Allan Poe's The Black Cat. It's a movie that features neither the story of the Black Cat nor demons. And Luigi Cozzi has said that it's actually the third film in Dario Argento's Mother's trilogy after Suspiria and Inferno. Three more to go. Three more to go, I promise. So Michele Soavi makes probably his best movie. It's really difficult to find this now, and I haven't seen it in like 30 years, but it's great. It's called Cemetery Man, but it gets released as Demons 95. It comes later. And then the last two, they're like international. Fulci's Demonia, which has nothing to do with the Demons movies, gets released in many markets as New Demons. And then there's another unrelated movie that gets released as Demons 7. So if you're counting. So
we're doing New Demons. Are we going to go back to Demons Classic at some point?
With the Coke connection.
Yeah.
Eventually we'll talk Italian The House series and the Evil Dead series. That's my other favorite, just bonkers timeline of releases and what it's called. What
I'm exhausted.
I also should mention, I had mentioned that Goretta, who plays Rosemary, had starred in some Bruno Mattei movies, who's famous for doing the ripoffs. He made a movie called Shocking Dark Terminator 2, which came out before Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which is, of course, an unofficial sequel to Aliens. So, fucking love Italian horror movies, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, rules. It's not boring, if just, nothing else.
chaos, just chaos reigns. Okay, so back to this, our climax of demons. We have this fight on the rooftop where, unfortunately, our masked man has underestimated the resourcefulness of a girl who grabs the grapple hook harpoon, pins him to the ground with it before George can climb up, and they grab a real heavy pipe and just slowly smush him down onto some rebar.
Yeah, they do.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. But what's this? The world is infected. That's why the helicopter came in there. They see demons attacking people on other rooftops. They climb down. There's demons running the street.
I feel like this happened fast.
Yeah, no, the world was not ready for demons, man. It was.
Also, did it just start in this theater or was it everywhere?
I almost kind of get the impression that maybe like time just works different in there or something, or like, I don't know. Again, it's like Twisted Sister video logic. It's Michael Jackson turning to the camera at the end of the Thriller video. Like, ah. they get picked up. They get saved by a fleeing family with weapons who saw lights in the sky, and they think there's still civilization out in the wilderness to the west. Which is, it feels like they put out a casting call for Donald Pleasance for this, and they got Donald Pleasant as the dad. But I'm curious if did you stick around through the credits? Did you get the mid credit jump scare?
Yes.
Oh, good. I know, like, a lot of times we finish these, and especially if they're ones that you're not as interested, like you see one line of text, you're just like, nope, and power.
This movie just kept going. I didn't. There were like 47 logical endpoints, and they just kept blowing right past them. So
still 90 minutes, baby. The perfect length of a movie. Yeah, Cheryl's infected, and she turns and gets like a last jump scare before she gets blown away by
the child.
The kid who plays Bob in House by the Cemetery. We'll get to House by the Cemetery sometime.
When was she hurt?
Sometime.
I would have thought it would have made more sense for George to be the one who turns, since he actually got pulled off of the bike by demons at one point in time.
Maybe the other way that you could become a demon is if, like, your new boyfriend just tail whips you off of a dirt bike. you got more stuff you want to talk through, or do you want to head up onto the sales floor with this guy?
Maybe we can go to the sales floor. I wrote "Bye, Felicia."
I think this one it works best. Like, this is like, we've talked about certain movies like this before that are like party movies. I think this is like an ideal party. This is like the movie you put on, and it's like, hey, has anybody seen Demons before? And, like, if you pay attention or if you don't pay attention to it, it kind of works on both levels. Like, you're either getting, like, a 90-minute, like, constant source of what the fuck, or you're looking up from your conversations and your drinks every, like, 10 minutes, like, wait, what? What's happening in this movie? Is that Motley Crue? Is this White Wedding? Are they snorting coke out of a coke can?
What was the budget for the soundtrack on this thing?
Well, I think this is kind of before a lot of these bands broke. Like, I don't think Crue was big in like 85, and like this album with like White Wedding was the one that like broke Billy Idol. So I think they kind of just like
they just lucked into it.
Yeah, like I think Rick Springfield had maybe put out some stuff. There's another band on here, Go West, that like the punks are listening to when you first meet the punks. That is like the most like soft new agey music, the most inappropriate to the punks intro.
Yeah.
I kind of love it all the more for that. The Accept song in here, it's called Fast Like a Shark.
All right.
Fucking great, right? Like the one guy at Accept just running into like all the other guys and Accept like, guys, our new song. I think this is just like a rock and roll gore lunacy. This is like sort of when in America they were like the MPAA was like stepping down on what gore you could get away with in a movie. And I think if like you like that, if you enjoy like this just the kind of chaotic insanity that a horror movie can bring you. I think this is a really great one for that. And there's some really cool like shots and moments in it. It's not just all like what the fuck. Like I think some of the scenes are legitimately pretty frightening. And like if you picture yourself in that situation of being trapped in a small space with a demon clawing behind you, or being pinned in or something, or the razor across the skin. I think that's like,
yeah.
I agree with that. Or like the scene, like they used reflector paper in their eyes and like shined the light back on them. So when their eyes are glowing and they're rising up out of the stairwell.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a awesome money shot. Like it's on the poster for a reason.
Yeah.
Curious what you thought of this one. I thought it'd be a fun Christmas present of like, I don't know, maybe you wanted a movie you had to think about a little bit more, but sometimes it's nice to just, you know, turn the old noodle off and watch demons, right?
Yeah, no, I can see that. I have to say that I'm not buying this one. Here's why. I found myself laughing at it more than with it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Which I guess sometimes can be okay, but it really, I had a hard time getting into it because of how, I guess, disjointed and nonsensical everything. Not everything has to have a through line, but this just seemed like a lot of stuff thrown together. And yes, there were some really impressive practical effects and some really interesting and cool set pieces. But overall, it was not enough. It felt like someone was making a movie, like they had heard about horror movies. They heard someone talking about a horror movie, and they just heard like specific things and just tried to throw all that stuff in without actually understanding why those things worked in the other movies.
I don't know. Agree to disagree on this one. I don't think this is I think there's things with like the dubbing that we laugh at now because it's, you know, it's stilted and weird, but like,
yeah.
And I think there are some like intentional jokes. I think like the coke up the nose and the blind man at the theater, those are like intentional jokes, not like
the things that bother me about it weren't the foreignness of it.
Yeah.
Like I can get over the line reads and maybe some of the awkward dialogue. It was more stuff like the guy crawling like that in the ventilation shaft. Why was that a thing? Why did no one say, why are you doing that? You look ridiculous. Particularly when he's doing it like that and his girlfriend who's with him isn't struggling at all. Why is he having like the most difficult time ever crawling down this perfectly flat and roomy shaft when she's just like out for a stroll?
Well, one of those people is, related to the producer, and one of them is not. So you gotta look weak for my daughter. But she's not good at much, but she's good at crawling. You gotta really, really.
Oh, I would argue that because she had her own questionable crawling segment earlier in the movie, which is weird. Like the two people have the hardest time crawling, thrown in the scene that specifically requires it.
All right. You've given my Christmas gift, re-gifted it to somebody. You've taken it back to the store.
I want to be clear. There is stuff about that. Like, I can understand why a movie like this would become a cult favorite, which is baffling to me that it was mainstream successful. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Cocaine was a hell of a drug, man. You go to see this movie in your, like, Michael Jackson zipper jacket and, like...
This is one of those times where I think it is literally only the execution is putting me off of it. Like the ideas are all there and all things that, I mean, you said you thought I would like this, and I can understand why you would think that. Like there was things about this that would seem to be right up my alley, and just the execution was not there for me.
Okay. No, the gore doesn't push it over the edge. The fact that it's like got some Guar movie style kills, people getting their like heads pulled apart. Or
like I said, they're like some of the effects and some of the set pieces really cool, just not enough to save it.
Well, I've got a Crispin Glover Award for acting excellence here to hand out, I gotta say that Bobby Rhodes as Tony the Pimp, he taught me to feel even while telling me not to touch things. It's a masterful performance. It's
not what you touch with your hands. It's what you touch with your heart, Josh.
Now I want to see if somebody could like recut this like Shining trailer style into like a heartfelt
family. That is a that's a tough assignment. Listeners, get on it.
Oh, I have a listener art challenge for later on, so I'll put that one up there. So let's talk a little bit about next time. So this is gonna release on Boxing Day, and who's that stomping around on my rooftop on Boxing Day? Is that rooftop boxing champion Jason Voorhees himself?
Oh shit.
2023. It's already gonna be better than 2021 and 2022 by default, because it has two Friday the 13ths in it, and one of them is in January.
All right, I will. I'll get myself ready, I guess.
Well, you've got a choice to make, my friend.
All right.
So this one's
not Friday the 13th.
Certainly not. Certainly no. So we have a theme of beginnings and renewal in January. So I've got some choices here for some times that this series kind of reinvented itself a little bit.
All right.
A series that's constantly reinventing itself, I should say.
Well, one of the things we love about it, right?
Yeah. First up, we have the series inventing itself. We haven't covered the original yet. We could do Friday the 13th, the original 1980 movie.
Never seen it. I mean, that's not shocking, but...
Yeah. The next one is we could do the Friday the 13th sequel that's called A New Beginning. We could do part 5. That would also... We would watch all the Tommy Jarvis movies, which I referred to him mistakenly as Tommy Doyle in a prior episode, and I had to do 70 Hail Jasons to make up.
And I don't even know if you're over it yet.
We could also do part 7, The New Blood. This is the one where Jason fights a Carrie. So if you want to see Jason fight a Carrie, that's The New Blood.
All right.
And then reinvention. We have the last official Friday the 13th movie that got released. The reboot. We have the 2009 reboot of the series, Friday the 13th, the Platinum Dooms one. So, what's our poison? What are we celebrating Friday the 13th with this year?
This is tough, because we could go all the way back to the beginning of what started the whole thing, which is interesting to me. Okay. We could also close the book on a chapter which included the only movie thus far in the series that I have enjoyed.
Yep. We could do that.
Jason versus a psychic lady is interesting. We haven't seen that yet. Someone who could actually kind of go toe to toe with him.
Yeah.
Or a reboot, which, I mean, that's real hit or miss, but I feel like some of these older series really could benefit from that. I think I want to go all the way to the beginning.
Okay. We're backing it all the way up. We're heading back to Camp Blood, and it's first attempt at reopening after the tragedies that beset it in the 1950s and 60s. We're doing the original 1980, the Friday the 13th. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Before we get into our business stuff, is there anything you wanted to put over? Anything you wanted to shout out?
Christmas.
Yeah. Just time with family and friends and holiday cheer.
It can be rough for some people. I have had my fair share of rough Christmases, but overall, it's a good holiday.
It's one of the top 10.
One of the ones that I like.
Yeah, you wish happy holidays to anybody, you know, whatever they celebrate, whether that's Demon's Day or Christmas, or one of those other ones that other cultures celebrate. I want to put over our friend Jen Fett has recommended on the last episode White Lotus that she was on. Okay. And I started watching that. I'm still kind of getting through the first season, but it's real good. It's like a kind of a non-traditional mystery where you know somebody's dead at the beginning, but you're trying to figure out who gets killed kind of in the flashbacky stuff. And I'm in the first season right now. So maybe as a sell, are you familiar with the sequel to 2001, 2010, The Year We Make Contact?
Familiar with it in that I know it exists. I don't think I've seen it.
Well, 2021 apparently was the year we saw Steve Zahn's dick. So if you need to really just see what's the guy from Saving Silverman and That Thing You Do packing, think? What's he working with?
It's a question I've often asked myself.
Then White Lotus will be your balm. You will join those who have seen and those who have not. Will be divided.
The two types of people.
All right, so let's get on to the business stuff here. Please reach out to us through the Facebook group is probably the best way to do it these days. Just answer our robot questions. We'll let you in. The email is sellingthescream@gmail.com. Please send something to that dusty old inbox. Offers to hold on to some money for any like Nigerian princes or, you know, any way I can contact like a hot single in my area would be appreciated. Those seem to be.
I'm always looking for a couple extra inches, so that's good too.
And like, you know, if English is not your first language, like that's fine. That's like, we'll take those pills from those folks as well. And even if you don't have a lot of really good subject verb agreement. But yeah, just reach out to us there. We're also like still on Twitter ? So
do we really want to promote that?
I mean, it's us and some Nazis, I guess. That's
good company.
Yeah, just I don't know.
We're gonna be the last holdouts.
Yeah, just we don't have a blue check mark. We haven't paid for the privilege. The real concerning thing is that the best place to watch the hilarious fall of Twitter is on Twitter. So mm-hmm. It's a real like it's real hard to like look away from that train wreck in real time. If you could also if you could leave a review on the podcatcher of your choice, iTunes drives the most engagement. Spotify is also a pretty good one. Well, now that adept listeners though have reached that know that we've reached episode 69, they can start to unfurl our So Dark Is the Con of Man elaborate riddle that we've hidden throughout all of our episodes. So just re-download those and just isolate the audio, listen real close, and you'll find all the clues to lead you to thousands of dollars in cash and prizes.
This has been a long game. And I'm surprised we've managed to not talk about it up until now.
Yeah, So Dark Is the Con of Man.
True.
But yeah, until next time, just for the two Friday the 13th in 1 year, we're so blessed, Jed. We'll do that next time. We'll take a little break here for the holidays and comes back on the real holiday, Jason Day, with the original Friday the 13th. We're to do it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yep. So then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you.